The Water Dragon. For 3 days and three nights, Cadmus, Harmonia, and their train of loyal Tyrians followed the heifer with the half-moon markings as it lumbered up and down hills, through meadows, over fields, and across streams. They seemed to be travelling in a southeasterly direction towards the province of Boeotia, a central region of Greece north of the Gulf of Corinth. Without giving too much away, it is worth relating that it once bore the name Cadmes. Harmonia believed that the heifer might turn out to be Europa herself. After all, in ravishing her, Zeus had transformed himself into a bull, so why might she not have taken bovine form too? Cadmus, hypnotized by the rhythmic swaying of the cow's broad posterior, was more inclined to think that the whole thing was a cruel hoax sent to perplex him. Quite suddenly, after descending a steep hill and arriving at the edge of a wide plain, the heifer sank heavily down and gave vent to an exhausted groan. "Good Lord," said Cadmus. "Just as the oracle prophesied," cried Harmonia. "What did the Pythia say? Where the cow drops, there shall you build. So." "So?" said Cadmus, irked. "What do you mean, so? Build? Build what? Build how?" "I tell you the thing to do," said Harmonia. "Let us sacrifice the cow to Pallas Athene. The poor thing's almost dead anyway. Athena will guide us." Cadmus agreed and elected to pitch a primitive kind of camp right there. So that he could properly purify the sacrifice, he sent some of his men to fetch water from a nearby spring. Cadmus slit the cow's throat and was just sprinkling its blood on a makeshift altar bedecked with wild flowers and burnt sage, when one of the Tyrians returned in the most pitiable state of distress, bearing awful news. A dragon, in the grotesque form of a giant water serpent, guarded the spring. It had already killed 4 men, constricting them in its coils and biting off their heads with its enormous jaws. What could be done? Heroes do not wring their hands and wonder. Heroes act. Cadmus hurried to the spring, picking up a heavy boulder on the way. Hiding behind a tree, he whistled to attract the dragon's attention and then threw the boulder at the dragon's head, smashing its skull and killing it outright. "So much for water snakes," said Cadmus, looking down at the monster's blood and brains as they mixed with the waters of the spring. A voice sounded out loud and clear. "Son of Agenor, why do you stare at the snake you have slain? You too shall be a snake and endure the stares of strangers." Cadmus looked around but could see no one. The voice must have sounded inside him. He shook his head and returned to the camp, delighted alike by the cheers of his supporters and the admiring kisses of Harmonia, to whom he said nothing about the voice he had heard. Far enough away to be able to do so without Cadmus hearing, one of his men was drawing in his breath through his teeth with the irritating relish of those who have bad news to impart. This man came from Boeotia and whispered to his companions with a wise shake of the head that Dracon Ismenios, the Ismenian dragon, was known to be sacred to Ares, the god of war. "Indeed," he went on, "some believed that the creature was actually a son of Ares." "No good will come of this deed," he said, tutting and clicking. "You do not cross the god of battles with impunity. No, sir. Makes no difference who your grandfather is." Ovid calls it Anguis Martius, the snake of Mars. It seems Apophis, snake, and Dracon, dragon, were pretty much undifferentiated in Greek myth, much as Wurm, worm, and Drachen, dragon, are interchangeable in Germanic legend. It is worth recognizing here that one of the most burdensome challenges faced by the heroes and mortals of that time concerned their relationships with the different gods. Picking your way around the jealousies and animosities of the Olympians was a delicate business. Show too much loyalty and service to one, and you risk provoking the enmity of another. If Poseidon and Athena favoured you, as they did Cadmus and Harmonia, for example, then the chances were that Hera or Artemis or Ares or even Zeus himself would do everything possible to hinder and hamper you. And heaven help anyone foolish enough to kill one of their favourites. All the sacrifices and votive offerings in the world couldn't mollify an affronted god, a vengeful god, a god who had lost face in front of the others. Cadmus, by slaying an Arian favourite, had certainly made an enemy of the most aggressive and remorseless of the gods. But he knew none of this, for the muttering in the ranks of his retinue had not reached his ears. He blithely lit the incense and completed his sacrifice to Athena, feeling that things were still going very much his way. This feeling was reinforced by Athena's immediate and benign appearance. Pleased by the offering of the heifer, she glided down from the cloud of fragrant smoke that Cadmus had sent up, and favoured her humble worshippers with a grave smile.